Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
But it's something else to watch two men at the highest level battle, and one may be favored over the other, but you never know what's going to happen. And that's why boxing is the way it is.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
He comes on damn near Parpedo's full steam ahead.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Live worldwide, emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated but never duplicated, 37 make that, 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. Of course, I'm also a four-time Golden Glove Boxing Championship winner. And of course, I've won some awards for my boxing. But that means, you know, in books and maybe in life, I know a little bit about boxing, but most boxing fans know more. So if you'd like to join us on the toll-free phone line, I open that up to you right now. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Or get this. If you want to go non-commitment, you can text us here in the studio. Non-commitment text line, of course, the number 415-275-1613. The text line here in the studio, you can call me, you can rip me, you can do whatever you want. Bottom line is just, you know, don't get too heavy. 415-275-1613. That is the studio text line. Very impressive performance yesterday for the WBO Super Featherweight Champion. Talk about Jamal Superfly Harry, of course, now 23-2, 11 KOs. Stopped Carl Frampton. Frampton didn't come alive. Of course, Frampton, Carl Frampton, the former champion at 122 and 126 pounds, moves up too much. I keep telling you, size matters in two things. Combat sports and pornography. Guess what? This was combat sports. Poor Carl Frampton should go back to 126 pounds. I tried to tell people, moving up and weight, just gain a few more pounds. It ain't that easy. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We're circling the bases, of course, with Muhammad Ali today, of course, his career, and we'll bring in Larry Merchant. Lots of stuff today to talk about on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, WBC Boxing TV as well. Coming to you live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He is the greatest fighter of all times next to me.
A disputatious boxing fan is one that simply can't come to grasp with the fact your guy lost. Pete Alvarez was a local San Francisco boxing trainer in the 1970s and 80s, and he was probably the most disputatious man in boxing history. Pete would put on these scenes, looking up to God, running over to the boxing commission ringside, all the while screaming his fighter was scandalously robbed. They stole it from us, screamed Pete Alvarez time and time again. The truth of the matter was that his guy, Pete Alvarez's boxer, had been knocked out cold. That, folks, is disputatious. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC TV, as I mentioned in the open. The WBO Super Featherweight Champion, Jamal Herring, stopped Carl Frampton in the fifth round six last night. Of course, that was in Dubai. Caesar's Palace got a place in Dubai. Caesar, listen, I know everybody's going over to Dubai and, like, you know, it's like the hot tourist place. It's only thing hot about Dubai is the weather. It's like 130 degrees in the wintertime. You don't want to go there. You just sweat 24-7. Unless you're Bruce Lee and you've surgically removed your sweat glands, okay, you don't want to go to Dubai. You just don't. There's nothing to go to Dubai. There's nothing there but burkas and hookers. That's it. That's all. I was in Dubai 2 weeks. I was in Dubai for like 14 or 15 days. Nothing but chicks with burkas, women working, wearing masks, okay, and which is sort of cool here in the United States since being the pandemic, that kind of stuff. So they were pre-pandemic with the mask. But outside of that, it was burkas and hookers. That's all there was in Dubai. Gambling, hookers, prostitutes. I mean, come on. It was just like any other sleazy place, except it was in Dubai, and you had to travel to get there. And usually if you travel on Emirates Airlines like I did, you got food poisoning, and your entire 14 days there was absolutely horrid. So the bottom line is I never, ever in my life want to go back to the country of Dubai. Straight up, we'll be talking about Muhammad Ali in depth, of course, on this show today. Of course, the greatest, having passed away a few years ago now. Septus down there in Arizona, that's what took his life. Of course, some people say that He died from boxing related results. You know, he died from old age. He was 76 years old, and his body went a long way. And it isn't like today where guys are living to their 80s or 90s and things like that. The bottom line is, you know, Muhammad Ali was in poor health for a long, long time. Anyway, speaking of a guy that's in great health, let's take it to Southern California, Santa Monica, California, and bring in the retired HBO godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant. How are you today, sir?
Good morning, Pedro. I'm doing as well as an old man can expect to do.
Okay, and how's the godmama?
She's doing all right this morning.
That's good. Now, I want to ask you, because last week you sort of touched on it, and, you know, I've been, well, first of all, I guess I have to admit this, I've been thrown out of arenas. I've been told by promoters not to show up. I mean, you name it, I've pushed people the wrong way. But I've never been thrown out of a country, and I've been to 34 countries, not been permitted to go back to a country. So can you expand on the reason why they wouldn't let you back in for the Muhammad Ali George Foreman fight in October 1974 into Zaire, Africa, the former Congo?
The fight was postponed because Foreman suffered a cut, I believe, was on his eyelid in training. And the fight wouldn't happen for 6 weeks, so I decided I had to go home. And then a few days before the fight, I went to the airport in all my innocence, hoping to go back to see that fight, and that fight of the century. And when I got to the airport in New York, there were some government, Zairean government officials there, and they informed me that I was not welcome to go back. And
why?
Then I had to figure out in hindsight what exactly had I done.
Okay.
And I suppose. I had gone there a few weeks early, and I was writing columns, and I was musing about writing a book about the adventure. And so I might have written something to the effect of that the dictatorial government there was giving their citizens a circus, this big fight, instead of bread. That's one of the things that they might not have been happy about. But at the same time, I wrote that I understood that this was a poor country and that they were trying to build their business and their tourism. They had some vast game preserves that had been closed to the world for years, in which they supposedly had some exotic animals not seen elsewhere. And that this was what governments try to do, and Don King went around the world to the Philippines, to Jamaica, and to Africa, selling fights between Americans. And there was a column, a specific column I wrote, now that I recall, now that I'm babbling. I was in a hotel lobby, and I noticed in a corner of the lobby, a white-haired woman, obviously a Western, probably an American woman, having a sort of animated discussion with Don King. And I looked, and I thought, what's that all about? Well, when King left, I went over to the woman and introduced myself and found out that she was exactly what she looked like, which was a librarian in a high school in Michigan. And she was there with a friend, and she had signed on for a deal to go to the fight, and while she was in Zaire, that her and her friend would be flown to one of these game preserves in the eastern part of the country. And she told me that this flight never materialized, that Don King almost expressed total innocence about what was going on. What a surprise. And so I wrote a column about it. Now, I don't know if the government in Zaire took offense at that.
Or Don King.
But I imagine that Don King did. And so maybe that was the source of my being barred from going back. There was also I wrote about the fact that Don King had sold the government thousands of beds that it would need for the influx of fight fans and tourists that would come to the fight. And, of course, it turned out that those thousands of tourists didn't show up at all. But it was a great fight.
The Mobutu Mattress Company. I mean, you know, when Don King's, this was the first time that Don King, of course, was his first big event. This was the first time he was able to sell something to the world. And of course, you're right, he brought two American fighters over there. But what he sort of promised them was that this was going to become Las Vegas, Palm Springs or something like that. And then when I was, even as a kid, I didn't think that, you know, there was going to be like Palm Springs and lions in Africa, not in the Congo.
Well, maybe he was thinking of Northern Africa.
But how was he able to pull this off in all these different countries?
Look, I don't know the details, Pedro. Okay. I know that he was able to convince the heads of states in these exotic locations for heavyweight championship fights that the fight and the exposure it gave to the countries would be paid over many, many times by attracting tourists. And they believed him, or they wanted to believe him, and not too many of them invited him back.
You know, I was thinking of President Marcos, of course, the murderer that he was, having snuffed out his Corazon Aquino's husband, and I forget what his first, Nino Aquino, I believe. Anyway, I met Corazon Aquino here, and I was part of her presidential guard here in the mid-1980s when I was with the SFPD. She was a wonderful lady. And when I asked her about President Marcos and boxing and coming to the Philippines and this and that, and she said, although it showed the Philippines on a worldwide stage, it brought nothing economically to the country at all.
Right, but what happened was, Manny Pacquiao came to America from the Philippines.
That was 50 years
later. And many years later, of course. And he discovered that there are all those Filipino immigrants in the U.S. who wanted to see him and cheer him and so forth. And so he became a star in the U.S. An international star, a Filipino fighter.
Godfather, he's basically still in the upper echelon of boxing at the age of 41. How come?
Well, because everybody is maneuvering themselves or trying to maneuver themselves into some fabulous fight reward. You know, tens of millions of dollars. And so it puts a freeze on actually getting anything done because they're all trying to manipulate the system and waiting for that magnificent payday that's going to reward their grandchildren.
Good luck with that one. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live, World War, of course, coming to you from the Sports Byline Studios in the City by the Bay, San Francisco, California. the Godfather, the retired HBO Godfather, Larry Merchant, is blessing us with his presence. You are tuned to the longest-running fight show in history, celebrating 38 years of radio presence. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. After the break, more with the Godfather, Larry Merchant.
Oh, I feel nice. A sugar from spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
You know, it's my theory that if Don King was born rich and white, he'd be Donald Trump. And if Donald Trump was born poor and black, he'd be Don King.
Well, I have to talk to my lawyer on that one.
So the question is, has Don King ever been in a fight? According to books I've read in high school, he ran the other way anytime a confrontation presented itself. Of course, there was the confrontations with Bob Arum, a couple little scuffles on the ringside, this and that. But December 11, 1981, it was a drama in the Bahamas. Muhammad Ali, of course, his final fight against Trevor Burbick. Ali would lose a 10-round decision there. Don King had nothing to do with it, but the Muslims lumped him up after the show, lumped him up visibly, and he was beaten up. So outside of being beaten up by the Muslims, I don't think Don King's ever been in a fight. Of course, he's been lit up by Mike Tyson. I was on the phone with him one time when a fight broke out, I think, in the car, allegedly. Of course, the driver was Isidore, and his deceased, I can't remember Isidore's other name. Last name, but Isidore was a driver. Evidently, he got out and tried to say something to Mike Tyson and got slapped around for it. So that's basically the only time Don King's ever been in a fight that I know of. Larry, did you witness any Don King fights? Real ones?
No, but Don King was a numbers runner in Cleveland before he imagined himself and broke out as a fight promoter. And, I'm guessing he might have had a fight or two in those days.
You know, he didn't for the most part. I looked up, I read a lot about his Cleveland background, this and he just wasn't a tough guy. What he did was he would beat up guys who were smaller than him. He was a bully. I mean, he was a thug, but he wasn't really a tough guy per se, and he didn't want to put on that tough guy persona unless he had to. And of course, the guy that he murdered, the second guy he was convicted and went to jail for, I think his last name was Garrett, and the guy said something like, "Don King, don't worry, I'll get you the money." Those were the same as last words, and Don kicked him one more time in the head, and that canceled his ticket.
Don King is one of those up from the streets characters who had the imagination and the ambition to make something of himself, and he did.
No doubt about that. Now he's a big Trump guy, so we'll go the other way on that one. The current heavyweight division, of course, we've got these guys. They've signed for this two-fight deal, which is a pretty smart move, 50-50. Of course, Tyson Fury undefeated and got that one draw against Deontay Wilder. Of course, he erased that by stopping Wilder. And then you've got in the other corner the guy from the UK, the 2012 Olympic gold medalist, Joshua. Of course, he's once beaten, lost to Ante Luiz, came back and beat Ante Luiz in the rematch. They've signed for two fights. The first fight's at 50-50. The second fight is going to be 60-40 for the 60-60 for the winner, 40 for the loser. Why can't the welterweights get on that plane, on that same train? Are they just avoiding each other and don't want to? I'm talking about Bud Crawford and Errol Spence. It seems like Crawford seems to be dragging his feet on this one, maybe, in my perspective.
Well, I don't know the story, and I don't know the bucks they're talking about, but it took a long time for the two Brits to get together as well. It took a long time for Mayweather and Pacquiao to get together, and that seems to be the way the business model operates these days.
Interesting. As far as pay-per-view is concerned, the Yaps have taken over. Showtime's still around. In hindsight, could HBO have still kept, stayed competitive to an extent with a fight here and there?
Well, they never said they were going out of the fight world completely. They said they were stopping their fight shows, their programs, and they left a little bit of a loophole there where if something presented itself, they would try to jump in. But as time goes on, you have to be skeptical of whether anybody in that building really can remember the boxing program that helped to make the network. I don't know whether they're needed anymore. They've been superseded by promoters who can make their own networks.
Did boxing make HBO, home box office? Did boxing make it?
It was one of the things that it broke out for, absolutely, because they were, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvin Hagler. I was told that Marvin Hagler, when he became a fixture on HBO, that the network sold many, many subscriptions in the New England area where he was from.
Well, of course, the late Marvin Hagler passed away. Having passed away a couple of weeks ago. Natural causes. Being nosy, I was told he was suffering from some form of cancer for about a year, and that's why his wife said it was natural causes, and he went off. But evidently, nobody really knows, and may God rest his soul. And I will say this, I'll say it again. There are not too many. Joe Frazier was mentally tough. He was one of the most mentally tough men I've ever seen in my life, especially with that first Ali Frazier fight. But the mental strength of Marvin Hagler was unparalleled.
Well, it was, and it was, it inhabited a very strong body, and with a guy who knew how to box and fight and could take a punch.
Yeah, and he kept that persona all the way to the end. I mean, never any bad. How can I put this? He was clean. And when I say clean, I mean you didn't see any police blotters or anything. There's no scandals, this and that. I mean, when he divorced his first wife, it wasn't in the papers, things like that. I mean, Marvin was a little bit different. He was a unique athlete.
Well, he was, in boxing, he was a straight arrow.
As straight as they come. And, of course, he stuck with his team. Goody and Pat Petronelli, I thought, was against his best interest, but he stuck with them all the way into the end. And I guess loyalty does pay off, but bottom line was those guys didn't do enough in that Leonard fight. They should have stuck a needle in his ass. Had they stuck a needle in his ass, I think that he would have won that fight. Because it was close, Larry. It was close.
Define what needle in his ass means.
Go get him. Go wreck him. Go do what you did to Tommy Hearns. Go crazy.
Well, as I think I've said on your show in the past, Marvin went into the fight with the mindset that he could show the world that he could outbox a great boxer. That was his decision.
Well, the bottom line is it was a bad decision. Of course, he lost a split decision. The judge that voted for Marvin Hagler, he and I traveled around the world together, went to China once or twice. Lou Filippo, may he rest in peace. But he stuck to that 7-5 decision no matter what. Godfather, I want to wish you the happiest of Holy Weeks. I don't know how religious you are, but have a happy Easter to you and the Godmom, and give her the best. And as I say each week, I thank you so much for your time, as I feel blessed because, you know, not too many shows. I don't think anybody's got you weekly, and I feel gifted. I feel blessed.
Well, thank you, and happy Easter to you and all your listeners.
The retired HBO Godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant, a.k.a. Mr. Patricia Stitch Merchant. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live World. Did I get that right? I blew it again. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Atlanta, Georgia. We'll be right back.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
What is HIP? Tower of Power, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. That's HIP, of course, 24-7. You can check us at iHeartRadio or our podcast, of course, at anchor.fm. Straight up, we are also doing live video streams at twitch.tv. Check out the Sports Byline USA channel. We do them live and we do them delayed. And they do the highlights, the kind of good stuff. So the bottom line is all of our shows are on video, a live video stream and delayed video at twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. Now, focusing on Muhammad Ali, of course, born January 7, 1942. On January 17, 1992, his 50th birthday party, Diana Ross sings him happy birthday. They're celebrating 50 years of the greatest athlete, maybe the greatest spokesperson of the 20th century. I mean, before Parkinson's took his voice, I can't think of a more prolific speaker, I kid you not, than Muhammad Ali. Of course, born Cassius Clay, Louisville, Kentucky, January 7th, 1942. Here he is, Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell, celebrating.
Was he doing anything differently up to the time you hit him from the first fight?
Well, Howard Cosell, what he was doing was this fella making all this noise is Howard Cosell. What he was doing, Howard.
Good luck. I hope it's not an act. I hope you mean it.
If it's an act, just look at my record and see if there have the other fights been acts. Have they been acts?
Not so far.
Well, what makes you think I'm acting?
And with that final stage of the act.
This is unexpected. I didn't know you would invite me to do this. Oh, hold it. You must be on boxing position and just have a little dance like you're boxing. And in just 1 second, I have to time it. And for 1 second, right there, see?
Whom would you like to fight and where and when?
I'd like to fight whoever you think's the best, the number one man. I'd say he's Zor Foley.
I'm not sure that there's anybody left, really, for you to fight.
You.
That may come about someday. Thank you for coming
on. Stay in shape.
Are you taking Zor Foley too lightly? Why would you say that? Because every indication has been that you're confident that you can beat Zor.
I'm confident I can whoop all of them. This ain't nothing new. My image is being confident. What you trying to make it look like something new for? I'm always confident I can whoop all of them.
You're being extremely truculent.
Whatever succulent mean, if that's good, I'm that.
Well, I tell you, Cosell, I've been taking oxygen because I needed the oxygen. What you will see is I won't need the oxygen tonight. I'm ready.
I want you so bad, I just get tired. I done made you great in this country, and you still popping off. I want you bad.
Oh, wait, let's get the facts straight. I made you.
You made me.
Nobody knew you.
You made me.
I took a poor little kid from Louisville
and made me.
Let's put
anybody
it on the
table. About you, anybody who didn't watch football didn't know you. Come on, it gets back with the interview now.
Number two. The body is now aging.
You ready?
A shell of what it used to be.
What am I going to do?
The man's beset by fear. What are you going to do to George for me?
He just said the man's body is not what it used to be. The man is beset by fear. Talking about me. Are you crazy? If I had a lower IQ, I could enjoy your interview. But as you said, it was extraordinary. It was still a good fight.
Yeah, it was a good
fight. But the soccer fight, Howard, I danced 12 rounds 3 years later. I got the films, if you don't believe it.
I saw it. I called it.
Well,
you
right.
Thought that fight was no contest.
You're not as dumb as you look.
Neither are you. And that's saying a lot coming from me.
What you call
it? Let's tell it like it is, right from the beginning.
I done made you famous enough. Everywhere I go, you follow me to get your name in the papers and on television.
I'd still you... be stealing bikes in Louisville if
don't
it weren't
for me. Don't tell people I stole bikes.
Everybody's talking about Joe Frazier. Joe Frazier. This chump's out there think Joe Frazier can beat me. I'm Muhammad Ali. I am the greatest. I brought to boxing the anchor punch, the ghetto whopper, the bull no punch, the Malaysian waltz, the double shuffle, the Russian bank, the rope, the dope, the marat. You realize we are opening up for Saturday. This is live. Split screen. I talk to you. I talk to Frazier. These people will then have a chance to evaluate your courage or lack thereof. You understand?
I mean, speaking simple English. I didn't go to school. I don't understand all these big words. You're always coming up with a lot of big words. You know what I'm doing? I promise you this, and I promise the world. People want to see me slap you. They want to see me do something to you, and that's against the law. But I'll tell you what, one of these days, I promise you, the next time you get in the ring agitating with me, I hope you're there on my last fight. I swear I'm going to pull it off. Harold Cosell, show the people that you're not the man you was a few years ago.
You always said, Muhammad, you're not the man you were 10 years ago, right?
Right.
Well, I'm going to ask your wife, are you the man you was last year?
You'll get a quick answer to that.
All of the years, all of the times together, I've enjoyed them. You're a very special man with a very special meaning.
Thank you.
To all of the American people.
Thank you.
I congratulate you. It's my honor. Your name is Muhammad. All the years, everything that's passed between us, it's so hard to believe and so memorable. And now it's time to say to you, Muhammad, God bless you and happy birthday to you. You're 50 years old. I never thought that could happen, not to you, but it has. And you know something? You are exactly who you said you are. You never wavered. You are free to be who you want to be. I love you.
Whew. That kills me. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Let me clear my head a little bit there. Of course, Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali, January 17, 1992. Howard would die a few years later of old age. Of course, Ali would pass on a few years ago from basically old age down there, 76 years old. Of course, I think that took place in Phoenix, Arizona, born in Louisville, Kentucky. But that little thing with Howard Cosell there at the end, his 50th birthday party, that brings a tear to my eye, and I'm trying to straighten out as I go. Of course, let's talk about upcoming boxing. Of course, take that back, the David Lemieux card. Of course, what's going on April 17th? David Lemieux is a big-time star, of course, on the other side of the border. No, not Mexico, in Canada. He's 42-4, former IBF title holder, at middleweight, of course, 160 pounds. Taking on Ronnie Landet, who was 17-3 with 11 whacks. That's been pushed off because of COVID-19 restrictions on the entry of foreigners into Canada. Of course, Canada's not letting people in. I don't know what we're doing, but I got my virus. I mean, my vaccine, got vaccine number one about a month ago, and then I got vaccine number two this past Wednesday. So evidently in like another 9 or 10 days, I'll be like semi-clean and semi, you know, protected from this virus. And I feel pretty good about that. And if you think the virus doesn't work, or if you have some doubts about the virus, think about this. Where they have vaccinated older people in old folks' nursing homes, the virus has gone away by a 96% rate. In other words, it's dropped 96% because the people got vaccinated, the old people, the most susceptible people. And yes, I might consider myself part of that crew. April the 10th, Jaron Ellis, kid from Philadelphia, of course, our boxing PhD. Socrates Palmer is real high on him, the kid from Philly. You know, Philadelphia fighters are usually a rough type of crew. Like Bernard Hopkins was a little bit smarter. He's a little bit more cerebral than your average boxer. But for the most part, guys from Philly just fought, you know, tough guys. You know, Meldrick Taylor, of course, fighting Julio Cesar Chavez. Had he decided to box with Chavez his last couple of rounds, because he was ahead, he would have won the fight. But instead, he wanted to take it to the Mexican superstar. And, of course, he got lit up and, of course, got stopped in the, what, 3 or 4 seconds left in that 12th round. From that point forward, Meldrick Taylor was boxing toast, and he just was. Of course, Chavez would go on to be a superstar. Of course, in fact, he's going to do something again in June, I think. He's going to take on Hector Camacho Jr., the son of the former Harlem Heckler, and I named him that. He loved that nickname. Harry's called him Hector, the Harlem Heckler, and he loved it. I mean, I thought he was going to get, some guys get, you know, a little irritated when I used to give him nicknames like I remember one guy loved his nickname, Juan Lascano. I called him the Hispanic Causing Panic. He loved that one, okay? But some guys didn't like the nicknames. We were like, you know, Canvasback and things like that. But no, Harold the Harlem Heckler, Hector Camacho loved that. And, you know, people say to me, what was he like? I said, well, there's like two different sides of Hector Camacho. There's a Camacho that's on coke, and there's a Camacho that's not on coke. And why do I say that? Because, you know, one time I had to beg him to come to a fight, not to come to a fight to watch it, to come to a fight to fight. Okay? And he did, and of course we all got paid and that kind of good stuff. So he saved the day, no doubt about that, in Carolina, Puerto Rico. Of course that was like in the year 2000 or something like that. But, you know, he died a very violent death, and it was all attributed to Colombian dust. So when I say to you, you know, drugs are taboo, they maybe haven't been for all of us, for all of our lives, but they are at this point in time. I'm telling you, coke is no joke. Coke is not the you know, it used to be 25 or 30% pure back in the 1970s and days of Studio West and that kind of good stuff, Studio 54. But now you're talking about, you know, 90%. Some of the stuff is 90% pure. And then, of course, you got the concentrates. So the bottom line is, stay away from the cocaine. Why did I get on the cocaine thing? I have no idea. I remember Bob Arum is 90 years old. Bob Arum smokes a lot of weed. And when Bob Arum when I broke into the boxing business, I guess it was about 1988, 1989. I take that back. It was right after I won that award. I won the handicapping award from Top Rank. And of course, he had to give me a $500 check, which was pretty cool. Master Bob gave it, no doubt about that. But he said to me, you know, they gave me a check. He was talking about it afterwards. You know, congratulations on winning the handicap championship. In other words, I beat all the writers in the United States as far as handicapping ESPN boxing was concerned for an entire year. Of course, I think I won by two fights over Dave Koken, the famous odds maker down there in Las Vegas. I only won by two fights. Anyway, so I get this $500 and Arum was talking to me afterwards. Somehow we got together and we were there for a couple of minutes and he says to me, "You do coke, Fernandez?" And I said, "No, I don't do coke." He says, "Good." He goes, "You see these guys around here?" He goes, "We're talking about the rest of the boxing media." He goes, "Most of these guys do coke." He goes, "And look at them. Look at them. They do coke and they drink." He goes, "Stay away from the coke. Stay away from the booze." He goes, "If you stick with the weed, you're going to be fine forever." I said, "Huh?" And I was a weed smoker at that point in time. So here's Bob Arum, a former U.S. attorney. Of course, one of the most powerful men in boxing, telling me, you know, stay away from stay away from the booze, stay away from the drugs, and stay away from the hard drugs, and stay away from the loose broads in the world of boxing. He goes, "And you'll last a while, no doubt about that." His prophetic words have served me good. Here I stand, the undisputed heavyweight champion of the radio airways, 38 years later. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA, of course, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. WBC President Mauricio Sulaiman. I will give you his Easter wishes in hour number two. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We've got open phone lines on the toll-free if you'd like. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. I get back to Jerry Nennis, the fighter from Philly, on TV next week right after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk, a.k.a. WBC TV.
It's macho time.
You know, I forgot to turn off the camera during the commercial break, and I threw a little tantrum there, so I might have got caught there on camera. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Of course, we'll be talking about the Harlem Heckler. I just did, of course, Hector Camacho. I'm going to go into depth a little bit about my relationship with him in hour number two. Of course, we still got the Ali special going in hour number two. Hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, forthcoming after, of course, the news at the top of the hour. But Jaron Ellis going on TV next week. Of course, Jaron Ellis, he came from Philadelphia. Guy looks good. Guy looks perfect. Guy looks like splendid at 26-0, 24 kills. But everybody looks good when they're undefeated. Take it on a very tough guy as Sergio Limpus, 16-1-1 with 12 KOs. Of course, I expect him to beat Limpus. We'll see where he goes as far as the worldwide stage is concerned. But the bottom line is he's a kid you might keep your eye on. I'm talking about Jaron Ellis, of course, from Philadelphia. Straight up, Hector Camacho, as I said, November 24, 2012. Why is that significant? I was celebrating my birthday, and they told me that Hector was dead. That was like blew me. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I didn't believe him. I thought that you were joking. Because, you know, people know that I know boxing. And, you know, and some people know I know that I knew Camacho a little bit. And they say, yeah, he's dead. No, he's not dead. The Harlem Heckler's not dead. Yeah, he was dead. He was shot in the face. Of course, that shot of him in the casket, somebody sent me a picture of that. It was one of the most horrifying pictures I've ever seen in my life. I don't like seeing pictures of people in caskets. The one with Alexis Arguello, Bill O'Neill sent me a couple of months ago, almost made me puke. But the bottom line is, this picture of Camacho was truly riveting because of the fact that, you know, he was shot in the face, and it was terrible. He was sitting in a car. They were doing cocaine sitting in a car, and this guy came up, and he had a grudge going against the guy that was sitting in the driver's seat, the drug dealer, the guy that Heckler was hanging out with to get some free cocaine. It was all about free coke. That's all it was. It was just free cocaine. Of course, Camacho, having snorted cocaine from the Golden Gloves, he was an addict. That was his downfall, Colombian dust, no doubt about that. So he's sitting there in the car, and they're snorting blow. Boom, there's blow out in front of him on the console between the seats, and some guy comes along and shoots them both, and Camacho dies a day later. Bottom line is, a sad ending to Hector Camacho. November 24th, my birthday, 2012. You are listening to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You are watching WBC Boxing TV live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. Of course, we've got another hour of Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV forthcoming here on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Straight up, stay tuned for hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, featuring the greatest, Muhammad Ali, live on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Upcoming after the news.